Welcome back to another episode of Better Than I Found It, the podcast All Things College Golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. Joining me today on Better Than I Found It is former Baylor All-American Braden Bailey. Braden is 4 years removed from school in his time here at Baylor, but he is going through the Korn Ferry PGA Tour qualifying as we speak. He's made it through the first stage, and this interview is before he heads off to second stage in a couple of weeks. Love to hear his story, especially how he caddied this year for a really close friend of his named Chandler Phillips, who got his PGA Tour card through the Korn Ferry Tour. But Braden talks about how he juggled playing and caddying in the same year and some changes he's made that have really changed his game for the better. I think you really enjoy this recording with Braden Bailey. Okay, Better Than I Found It listeners, let's welcome a former Baylor Bear, one of the great Baylor Bears that I've had in the 10 years that I've been here, Braden Bailey from Port Neches Groves, Texas. Braden, welcome to the podcast for a second time.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, it's great to obviously have Baylor people on this podcast because it's obviously a place that's near and dear to my heart right now. But I've got you here for a reason today because you are at a very exciting part of the year and nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
It can be the most fun and the least fun part of the year, if you will. But you're getting ready to go to second stage of the PGA Tour school.
Yeah.
For the Korn Ferry.
Yeah, no, very excited about it. It's been a few years since I've even gotten through to second stage, so it's kind of nice to have that opportunity, especially with how this year's gone for me. It's been an unusual path to second stage, but here we are.
It has been an unusual year, and you've taken your own path, your own journey. But for those out there listening, Braden played here from the fall of 2015 through the national championship in 2019 at the Blessings. Braden, you're the only player in Baylor history to play in four consecutive NCAA championships, only one. You played more competitive rounds than any other Baylor golfer in history. You never missed a tournament. I had to pick you one time in 4 years. And boy, that was
I was struggling.
You were struggling. And it's crazy because you had just played in a U.S. amateur in August, and you came back and you played the worst qualifying I could ever imagine. And people don't know this, but I had already told the team that Ryan Blagg would be making the picks that week, my assistant at the time, because I was going to be gone for 2 days, the final 2 days of qualifying. And I called him that night that he had finished qualifying, and he said, oh my gosh, can you believe this? Braden finished 11th out of 12. And I said, yeah, saw the scores. What are you going to do? He said, I think Braden should go.
Yeah, it was an ugly time. Yeah, that was funny because I played Western before that, and I was in a playoff to get to the match play. So my game was – the course we played at Western that year wasn't – it was very generous off the tee. It was just kind of a wedge and putting contest, and I've always been a good wedger of the ball, and I've had a good putting week that week. And I just got up – I didn't know where the ball was going, though, and that really showed in the qualifying. We had some – cart path out of bounds set up, and I hit a lot of balls into those hazards.
Well, as it turns out, you are a low score at Olympia Field, so it was a good pick.
Yeah, it was.
And then we won the tournament at Trinity Forest right after that, and then we won the Big 12 Match Play Championship, and you were a big part of that. So I look back on it and think to myself, you are one of the most decorated Baylor golfers we've ever had, so it makes sense you should be playing professional golf. So you've been out there, so from 2019, 20, 21, 22, 23, you've been out there four and a half years. You've had COVID in the middle of that. You've had a lot of disappointments and a lot of really good things happen as well. I think you played in the Houston Open, made the cut, and I think you were in the top 15 after a couple of rounds.
Yeah, I played well to start in 2019, and then COVID kind of happened, and it's just COVID. I haven't played much good golf, but we've been trending the last couple months, really. That's about it.
Well, my counterpart on the women's side here, Jay Goble, listened to your podcast that you did with me whenever that was.
Yeah, he told me.
And he said, is Braden okay? And I said, well, I think he's okay. Why? He says, that's the most depressing podcast I've ever listened to.
He told me the same thing.
He did say the same thing.
You need some help, bud.
Well, anyway, you weren't playing well at the time, so it makes sense that you might not have been as energetic as you normally are. But he asked me today, you think Braden's ready to do a good podcast? I think he's ready. He's playing well.
Yeah, I'm feeling much better.
Well, so let's put it in perspective. You made it through the first stage at the Rockwall Athletic Club October 17th through the 20th. You shot 72, 74, 70, 67, 283, got through the first stage of the Corn Ferry. I noticed that 74, it's kind of a high score in modern days. Wind must have blown that day.
Yeah, we got some wind that second round. I just didn't play very good. I really didn't play very good that week until the last 27 holes, I would say. Just wasn't driving it great, so just wasn't really in the fairway to attack, and I don't know what happened. I just kind of found something the back nine of that third round. I think I shot like a bogey free 300 on that backside, and I called my dad after, and I was like, okay, I don't know what happened, but something kind of clicked, and I think I'm gonna be able to kind of get after it in that final day.
Did you play good from the start the final round? That 67 is good one to finish on.
No, I played. I played really nice the final day. I only shot 2 under on the front side that day, but it was a really pretty 2 under. I mean, I hit it nice, just didn't make the putts I should have made. And then I actually doubled the 10th hole.
Oh, wow.
Really the only really bad drive I hit all day. It wasn't even that bad. I just kind of leaked it kind of 5 yards in the right rough. It's a tough tee shot, clipped a tree, dropped down, and just made a mess of it from there, kind of chipped it out, hit a bag wedge, bad double, and then we were in a twosome that day. It was me and Andrew Hudson. I turned to him. We were walking down 11 fairway. Both had good drives, and we were both kind of looked like out of it a little bit.
Yeah, you were on the outside at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I knew the number was probably going to be 5 under, and I was even par for the tournament, so I just looked at him. I'm like, all right, bud, let's do something special coming in, and luckily I did.
Did you shoot 5 under the back nine?
Three with the double.
Oh, birdied, three with the double.
I birdied 11 and then birdied 4 the last 5. So it was a clutch little finish.
Well, and that's why you are where you are today. The next stage being at the Tesoro Golf Club in Florida.
Yeah, West Palm.
Yeah, that's a couple of weeks away, a little less than 2 weeks away. How do you feel about your prep so far?
I feel good. Played a little APT fall event in between first and second and played really well. Was leading through 2 rounds by 3 and just kind of didn't have a very good last round. We got no wind and guys just came back on me. But I mean, it was nice to kind of feel, I wasn't super nervous or anything, but just kind of feel that pressure playing with the lead again, because it has been a while.
Yeah, I would say it's been a while. We were watching it. We were in Hawaii for our last tournament of the fall, and we were watching it online, and I kept on seeing he was two hours ahead of you, but Trey Winstead like was 8 under through.
Yeah,
I mean, at some point in the middle of that round, he just started making birdies and eagles.
Yeah, we got no wind that last day. It was blowing pretty good the first 2 days out of the north, and we got essentially no wind out of the east, southeast kind of that day, and just that wind makes the course play a lot easier. And I knew teeing off that I was gonna have to. I mean, my goal at the beginning of the day was like, okay, we're going to try to win this thing by 5. Mm-hmm. And then got off to a decent start. And then toward the middle of the round, just couldn't really get anything going. And unfortunately, just couldn't close the deal. But
well, that's all right.
It's golf.
You got the experience of being in the lead.
Yeah.
And you did make a little cash, so that never hurts completely. But, you know, that's also a good tune-up for this second stage of Corn Ferry Tour School, which will be November 14th through the 17th. When do you head down? Are you going to 2 or 3 practice rounds?
Yeah, I'll head down just Saturday night. I'll probably play 18 holes Sunday, and then probably just play 9 on Monday, just mm-hmm. see which side I'd like, which 9 holes I'd like to see again, and probably do that. That's kind of one of the things I learned this year from Chandler, is it's pretty easy to over-prepare to the point you're a little tired leading into the tournament. He does a really good job of not necessarily overdoing it. He'll play 9 holes Tuesday, 9 holes Wednesday, and then he's ready to go, so I'm kind of trying to take a page out of his book and simplify the prep and be rested up, because, I mean, Q school's just a stressful week overall.
Yeah, it is really stressful. And he, you mentioned Chandler. You mean Chandler Phillips, who you, we've got a great story to talk about with Chandler this year. But, you know, a lot of people would say, okay, second stage, there's lots of guys at second stage. But not very many guys at second stage who missed first stage by one shot each of the last 2 years. I mean, I was crushed both times for you. But tell me, how does one handle that? Because that may have been a little bit of the reason that Jay Goble noticed your tone of voice wasn't good. But it's like, how did you handle it? Because it throws you into a state of depression golf-wise.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, because you're playing for your career. So, I mean, you know that opportunity comes around once a year. And really, both years leading into first stage, I wasn't really playing good golf. But I felt like I found a little something leading in. Just that I felt like if I could just make the putts, I could kind of squeak by first stage and maybe kind of build into second stage. And I just, unfortunately, I wasn't able to do it those last 2 years. But I mean, it was a good learning experience. I mean, I really, like we talked about this year, I was kind of put myself in the same exact position. And I just knew I'd been there before, and that it was just an extra little incentive, an extra little motivation kind of too, because I know how it feels. It sucks. Mm, it's just, it really sucks, especially, I mean, you look over the course of 4 days and you can pick multiple shots each round. Like, man, I wish I could have that one back. I wish I could have that putt back. And I mean, and you can kind of sulk about it for the next month. And I kind of did that first time through missing by one, and the second go round, I felt like I handled it a little better, but I mean, it's still brutal. But that makes it even sweeter this time getting through, because I was on the number. Mm-hmm. I literally, so the first year I didn't get through at Golf Club of Houston, the 18th hole, there was a par five, hit drive fairway, greenside bunker in my second shot. I knew I had to get up and down to get through, hit a good bunker shot to 8 feet, just the left edge putt, missed it. And this year, last hole, same thing, reachable par five, hit a greenside bunker in two, hit the bunker shot to 8 feet, had a left edge putt, and I was like, oh man, this is how it's meant to be, this is destiny, and I made it to get through. And actually, it didn't, at the time I thought 5 under was going to be the number, so I thought it was to get through on the number, but actually I didn't have to make the putt, but man, it felt good to.
You thought you had to make it.
It felt good to make it, because it was I mean, it played out exactly the same as it did at Golf Club of Houston 2 years ago. It couldn't have been drawn up any better.
Well, you know, I think people that don't play competitive golf, or at least don't play it at that level, don't really understand how crushing that is, and don't understand, because you've played all summer long. Yeah. You've played for 5 or 6 months getting ready for this, and here you are, and in the moment, and it didn't happen. A good buddy of mine whose son played for me at Oklahoma State, Bob Tway, his son Kevin played for me. Bob missed the tour qualifying, the PGA Tour qualifying, in 81, 82, and 83 by either one or two shots each year. 1 year he shot 80 to miss it the final round. And, you know, once he finally did make it, he took off, and he ended up winning 8 times on the PGA Tour and a major. But everybody's journey is different. And his was too, because a lot of his contemporaries were already winning on the PGA Tour, and he was still missing the cut at tour school, or missing by a shot at tour school. Your journey's different. I mean, I think when you left, when we hugged each other in our arms, you know, it was like 4 great years are over in Arkansas at the National Championship. I mean, we both thought you'd be getting your tour card within a year or so. We just believed it.
Yeah, I struggled my senior year, but I mean, I kind of found my game that summer turning pro, and got into Houston, played well, and then I thought I was just going to cruise through Q school. I actually won first stage that year, and then second stage I just played sloppy golf, mm-hmm. made a lot of mistakes, and missed by a couple, and that was pretty crushing too, because I felt like my game was as good as it had been in a long time, and not get through that year was pretty deflating. But I mean, nowhere near as deflating as missing by one the last 2 years, but it still just sucks, because I mean, like I said, you're playing for your career, that's your career on the line, and that only comes around once a year. So I mean, the pressure, the sense of urgency is just heightened for those weeks.
Yeah, but if you haven't had the experience, how do you know how you're going to handle it?
Yeah.
And so you've finally broken through, and this year you made an 8-footer that mattered.
Yeah.
And you were able to get through. But again, speaking of your journey, wow, this one's really different because we mentioned Chandler Phillips a little earlier, and he just got his PGA Tour card off the Korn Ferry, finished 10th on the money list this year. You were his caddy. So
yeah.
Here you are playing competitively. I know you played in about 8 events this year, but you caddied literally a whole season for Chandler.
Yeah.
So I want to know, first of all, other than the fact you guys are childhood buddies and you competed junior golf against each other in South Texas, so you've known each other forever, but not many guys who want to play desperately for a living would do that. How did this opportunity come about anyway to caddy for Chandler?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I'm living in College Station now, playing at Traditions. I play and practice with them pretty much every day when we're in town. And I was just messing around at the facility, chipping around the putting green. And he came up one day, and we were just talking. He was doing the same thing, just messing around, chipping and putting. And I was like, hey, you have a caddy for the season? Because he had just gotten through final stage maybe a week before.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no. He's like, would you be interested? Because I'd caddied for him one time in... It was 2021. He got a sponsor exemption into the Korn Ferry in Dallas, and he finished 5th.
Mm.
Played really well.
You were on the bag.
I was on the bag for that. And he's like, you've caddied for me one time. This is the only good Korn Ferry event I've had so far, because he's had conditional since 2019, since we turned pro. And besides that, he hadn't really done much damage out there on the Korn Ferry. And he's like, you want to start the year in the Bahamas and come hang out? And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. Like, a paid vacation sounds amazing. So I agreed to do the first two in the Bahamas and then Panama and Colombia. And it just so happened he had a hot week there the first week in the Bahamas and won and then finished 12th. And he looked at me and he's like, hey, like, maybe we should kind of keep this thing going for the rest of the year. And I was like, I don't know. I kind of want to play some. So we had 6 weeks off. I played a couple APT mini tour events in between, missed the cut in both of them. And I was like, yep, you know what? I'm just going to stick it out with him on the bag for the year. So that's kind of what happened.
Well,
it's interesting how it went down.
It is crazy how it went down. But I remember talking to you by text message or maybe by phone call somewhere in the middle of all that. And I could see you were in between at the moment.
Yeah.
You're wanting to get Chandler. He's off to a hot start. You want to get him his tour card, but you also want to play. So at what point did you tip over to, okay, I'm going to get him this tour card, but I'm going back to playing? At what point in the season was that?
I told everybody, it sounds kind of backwards, but I wanted him, like, we're such good friends. I wanted him to get his PGA tour card locked up. And as soon as he got it locked up, I'd feel better about going to play again. Which people think it's backwards, because you're like, you're caddying for a guy, he's got his PGA Tour card, you're going to abandon him when he's going to be on the PGA Tour next year and you can make a lot more money than you do caddying on the Korn Ferry Tour. But I don't know how big of a role I played in it, but there's definitely a comfort factor for him having me on the bag there, to where he definitely played some pretty good golf when I was on the bag. So I just really wanted to get him over that edge, because, I mean, we talked about the start to the year, winning and finishing 12th, but I think the next 7 tournaments he missed 6 of those 7 cuts. So,
yep.
I mean, we had some rough patches too, and it wasn't always easy this year, but I mean, it was just so much fun. I'm trying to think of when I decided to
probably lately.
I still wasn't even sure if I wanted to play Q school, because I mean I travel with my clubs most of the year, but I wasn't playing or practicing like I should. And then I guess it was really I took a couple events off in Nashville and Columbus, and I played fine at one of the APTs in Victoria, and I was like, okay, I feel better about my game right now, like, let's give this Q school a shot. So, I mean, it probably wasn't until August, September that I was even certain about playing Q school,
well,
honestly.
I've got to tell you, I wouldn't consider playing in maybe at that time probably 6 events and caddying in 20. I wouldn't consider that the greatest prep for the tour school.
No, it's not great prep at all. But for me, it was perfect. I mean, I'm glad this year went down like it did, because I learned so much more on that side of the bag than I ever would have playing all year.
Let's talk about what you learned, because I know this. I walked a ton of golf with you when you were at Baylor. I didn't carry your bag because the NCAA wouldn't allow it, but I caddied for you a ton of tournaments. And to me, it's always so crystal clear. How can he make that decision? You know, why does he do that? You know, and it's pretty much the pressure and all of that that's involved in it. But you had to see things crystal clear that you didn't see before.
Yeah, no, I definitely saw how emotions can affect. There's one instance where we were at. We were in Colombia.
Okay.
And he bogeyed or doubled a par 5 number 8 and bogeyed or doubled a par 5 number 10. So he's hot going into 11 tee. And it's just the easiest 4-iron in the middle of the fairway of all time. There's water on the right and he wants to hit 7-wood. And that just brings the water in the right into play. And I'm like, Chandler, this is the most obvious 4-iron in the history of golf. Yeah. Just hit the 4-iron. He's like, no, I just want to hit 7-wood. I'm like, okay, if you hit 7-wood, you better hit that thing left because there's water right and that can get there. And he hits, what do you know, he's that 7-1 just right in the middle of the water. And I was like, that's just the most crystal clear 4-iron ever. But, I mean, it just shows you how easy it is for emotion to kind of get into your decision-making on the course. And, I mean, I know it happens to me all the time. So, I mean, I've definitely done a better job since getting back to playing a little bit of trying to separate the emotion from decision-making. But it's still not easy.
Well, I mean, it's everything coaches talk about all through the years. If a coach is thinking right, I mean, if you think about it, your golf is your golf. It's your 72. Mm-hmm. It's your 67. It's not the coaches. Yeah. And it's not the caddies. Truly, it isn't.
No.
So the player is always going to have more emotion attached to it. And I think it's really, really important if you're a caddy or a coach to divorce yourself from the emotion so you can help him make a clearer decision. Yeah. Can you think of an instance where he didn't trump you or he didn't veto your deal and where you actually helped him make a good decision? Or were there a lot of those?
Definitely a few times this year, just kind of in between clubs and I'll just lean him. I mean, it happens a lot. He just kind of in between clubs and I'll just kind of lean one way. Just, okay, it's a front pin. Let's just hit one extra and try to chip it. It just little things like that. But on the bag, I tried not to get – I mean, I try to help with the decision-making, but I try not to be overbearing and too involved because the one thing about Chandler, his golf IQ is, like, I've never seen anything like it. It's actually through the roof, and he does a really good job. I've never seen somebody so kind of self-aware of and just aware of how they're feeling that certain day with a club in their hand. He just knows no matter how he's hitting it, good, bad, mediocre, whatever, he just knows where the ball is going and his tendencies that day. And I've never seen somebody just that on top of it day in and day out. And that's why he's so consistent. I know he missed like more cuts than he made this year, but there wasn't a single week where we were out of a golf tournament at all. Like he was always, even when he missed a cut, it was a shot or two the entire year. So that was cool to see that from this side of the bag, to just be like, okay, I need to Maybe I'm not as aware as he is day in, day out, but I need to try to find a way to get more on that level because that's a big separator for him versus the rest of the field. And it's kind of hard to put into words exactly how he does it or what it is, but it's special. I don't know. I haven't seen anything like it.
Well, I think that's – I was going to ask the next question was going to be, what did you learn about the game at a high level? I think – you're just saying it right there. One, you got to detach emotion from it. But number two, at least being emotional. Number two is like he knows his game better than anybody.
Yeah.
And if he understands his own tendencies, there's huge value in that.
Yeah, there is. And another thing is just, I mean, when he won the first week in the Bahamas, it doesn't take perfect golf to win a golf tournament. I mean, that was the biggest takeaway from that week. Is, I mean, he looked at me after the round. He's like, I mean, I felt like I left a ton of shots out there, like, for overall for the week. Like, I mean, he played solid, drove it in play, wedged it nice, made a lot of putts. But it doesn't take perfect golf to win golf tournaments. And that was a big takeaway from that week. And just the year overall, I mean, he finished 10th on the money list. And we had a conversation after the year that he felt like he didn't play up to the level he wanted to play at. And overall, I mean, obviously it would have taken this year – getting his PGA Tour card going in, but he definitely wants to play at a little more consistent, higher level for next year. And I think he definitely will out there on the big tour.
Well, I think there's a lot of times you look at, it's not a direct relationship, but a guy who's been an All-American in college multiple times, he's probably pretty good.
Yeah.
And then he goes to this other level, and sure, he didn't start at the PGA Tour. He started at many tour events, and then the Korn Ferry, and then with status, Korn Ferry status for a little bit, but then full status, and then actually got his tour card. It's a little incremental step. His journey different than yours. Your journey different than the next guy.
Yeah.
And the fact that you took so much out of the caddying situation, I think is great. I really think it's great. But I also think it takes some humility. Humility, I guess, is pretty easy when you're missing cuts on the APT tour, to be humble.
I was just making money. That's great.
But there is a certain humility about, okay, I'm going to take this step back, what looks like a step back, in order to move forward, to move two steps forward. And, you know, you haven't been at the second stage since your first year, right?
Yeah,
as a professional.
It's been 4 years,
It's been 4 years. So it's like, I know you're playing better than you were a year ago. Mm-hmm. And part of and that's with less competitive events, less
work. Way less practice.
Way less practice. All these things. And you practiced harder than anybody at Baylor. Too hard.
Yeah,
I agree. I tried to get you off
track. I'm trying to practice less now, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But you're getting more out of it. And the fact that you gleaned some information from him, which is, he knows when he doesn't have his game how he can still get it around. Yeah. You know, Scottie Scheffler does the same thing. Mm-hmm. If he's not hitting that tee ball well, he's got this little low wipe cut that goes about 30 yards shorter, but it's in the fairway every time. And Randy Smith told me about that shot, and I've been watching Scottie play, and occasionally he'll be a little bit back there, and it's because he didn't have his game today.
Yeah.
He figured it out. So it's neat that Chandler may have taught you that. By the way, is there going to be a more country boy on the PGA Tour this year than him? You got to go back to Boo Weekly.
Yeah, probably not. That's what we always tell him. We actually had dinner with Boo in Exuma, actually. But everybody out there is like, Chandler, that's you in 20 years.
Oh, gosh.
He's in denial, but but well, it really is in 20 years.
Chandler was on my podcast, and I love him. I think he's a great kid. And I knew about him when I was still at Oklahoma State. Yeah. He was like a 12-year-old. But He definitely has a country flavor to him, and he loves to hunt and fish. And
he's hunting right now.
Is he hunting right now? Yeah. But no, it's a great experience. So I think it did take some humility to go back and say, I'm going to take this as a learning experience. I'm going to do something with this. And with less preparation, less work, less competitive events, you actually came out on the other side playing better.
Yeah.
You really did.
Oh, definitely better. Not even close, actually.
What are you going to take from that experience at the APT last week? You had the lead. You had the lead with 9 holes to play. And and they were making birdies, and you just didn't make any birdies. What can you take from that that's going to help you?
Yeah, I just I don't know exactly. I just didn't have my game last day, but I just didn't manage my game like I should have. I short-sided myself one too many times, not necessarily on par 4s or par 3s, but just – into greens on par 5s to where just don't give myself the birdie looks I should on the reachable par 5s. And just a couple, I just didn't hit as close as I should have that last day. I don't know if it was nerves or kind of playing with the league, getting a little too conservative, but it was just that's just a big week to build off of. I mean, I had a 3-shot lead going to the last day, and I haven't led a golf tournament in a while, so it's nice to get the juices flowing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, got the juices flowing a little bit in first stage too. So it's every time you put yourself in a situation, that situation, you learn something and you get those feelings again. And it's been a long time since I've gotten the feelings. You feel it when you're caddying. But it's not the same. It's not even close to the same. It's just good. I keep putting myself in that position because it's only going to help me going forward in the second stage.
25 years from now, Chandler and you will look back on that this year you spent together and think, you know, he may have won 10 times on the tour. Maybe you've won 10 times on the tour. But two buddies from junior golf, and you helped him get his card. I don't think he'll ever, ever forget that as long as
No, it was a special year for both of us. I mean, we traveled together most of the year. We're good friends. And I don't even think we got into one argument, really, on or off the course. It's honestly a miracle that happened. But, I mean, we really didn't. We're both pretty laid-back guys, easygoing, and I mean, it was a dream year for both of us, I think. I had no idea my year was going to go this way, but I'm really thankful it did. Thankful for him to kind of give me the opportunity, and I was just glad to help him get through. And because, I mean, the kid's a stud. I mean, we knew he was going to be a PGA Tour player. It's just a matter of when, and just to play a small part, and that was a lot of fun for me.
Good job there. It's great to have a friend out there. But you know, you told me earlier that you had learned some things about playing high level golf. Who's the most impressive guy you saw on the Korn Ferry Tour? Like, you're going, wow, this is something impressive.
Yeah, I mean, Chandler always impresses me. We played with Chris Goddard up the first two rounds at the last event, and he's just so solid, just well-rounded game, hits it forever. I mean, he's going to be a star out there. He didn't play as well as he would have liked this year, I would imagine, or for his standards. I don't think he played up to the level he'd like, and I mean, he still kind of cruised through and got his card pretty easily. There are a lot of guys. I mean, Ben Cole's won the money list this year. He doesn't miss, makes a ton of putts. Chan Kim, probably second or third on the money list.
Did you guys get paired with the Cootey twins, either one of them?
Yeah, they're both really good. They both stripe it. I mean, both swing it incredible, both stripe it, putt it great. I mean, those two kids are just bred to play professional golf. I mean, they're going to be around for a long time. There's just a lot of impressive young players out there.
Did you see or play with Mac Meisner?
Yeah, Max also really solid. It was good to see him clutch up that last round and get his car, because he played an unbelievable round, the last round of Victoria to get through. And Max just got a really solid well-rounded game.
He's got a lot of game. Yeah. I think that's what I love most about just having this conversation right here is I know we're talking about some guys who are going to win on the PGA Tour and maybe majors one day, but it's that little proving ground, because you don't get to see that in minor league baseball, because they're not really on television. The Korn Ferry Tour is on television, so you get to see it. Mm-hmm. You get to see the future stars, but we get to see it in college golf. Because I saw Chris Goddard up close and personal, and that guy is a stud.
He's got it.
He absolutely has it. And you just look at that. And Mac Meisner, I recruited him out of high school. And
he has it too.
They've got – and the Cootey twins, I had them on a visit here. So – I've saw it up close and personal there. We get to see it on the Korn Ferry Tour before they ever get to the PGA Tour. And I think that's where you're headed. I've got video. Every once in a while I'll send you a video of your golf swing when you were a skinny little scrawny kid. But you have one of the most efficient, beautiful golf swings, period, that I've ever seen. The big mistake, I think, is when you over-technique it, you over-practice, you hit too many balls. It's like, I would take that golf swing with a smile on my face and go beat people with it.
Yeah.
Are you feeling that way again?
Yeah. I haven't seen my swing on video in a long time. I haven't videoed my golf swing in, I don't know, a few months. I refuse to. So I'm kind of getting away from that and just going and playing golf again. The ball's been turning over for me, which is always good. I'm a natural drawer of the ball. And I still have a little squeeze cut if I'm, like you said, with Scotty, if I'm not feeling good that day, I can kind of squeeze a cut out there. But for me, if I'm turning the ball over in the long game, it's a lot easier for me to work a ball left to right when I'm drawing it than it is for me to draw it if I'm playing cuts that day. So I'm just feeling a lot better with the swing, with my game overall. My short game's been really solid, actually.
Let's talk about
which
your putting.
Nice.
Well, I took you to the Ping Factory when you were a freshman or sophomore, and they put you on their deal, and you were the fifth best score they'd ever had on this putting deal.
Yeah.
That's against all those tour players.
Yeah.
I think you're an amazing putter, but I know you went through a little stretch where you didn't putt as well. What have you changed in putting to make it so good?
Everything.
Just everything.
Pretty much everything. I mean, I've always used an answer blade style putter. I have a mallet now that I kind of got April, May.
Similar to the one Victor Hovland
putts
with?
Pretty much Victor's putter. It's an Oslo, slightly different head shape, a little longer head shape, but essentially the same thing. Was rolling it pretty nice when I did play over the summer, which wasn't much. And then I was in Boise caddying for Chandler, and Dylan Goodwin, the Ping, he's the PGA Tour putter rep now. He worked with us a lot when we were in college, though, when I was in school. And he told me, he's like, hey, I told him I was putting with. He asked me. He said, "Start trying to line putts up with that putter, and using a line, and just try it and experiment with it." Because I normally don't use lines, and ever since I've done that, I mean, I've been rolling it incredible. I mean, just like first stage. I mean, okay, I told you I buried four of the last five at first stage, but I mean, the putts I made, I mean, I made a 20-footer on 14, like a 50-footer on 15, 8-footer for par on 16, 20-footer for birdie on 17, and 8-footer on 18. And
wow, all, that's like, how you finished?
That's how I finished, yeah. So, and, I mean, just to make those putts when I needed to, I mean, it's been a game changer because I had a rough few years on the green. So, I mean, just see those putts go in, especially when it matters like that, I mean, that's a huge confidence builder.
Yeah, I would have to believe that you're believing in your putting again. Yeah. I mean, there was a time when you were an amazing putter.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're going to play the PGA Tour one day, you need to be an amazing putter again. You have to be. They're just great putters out there. But I love the fact that you're not as technique-driven on your golf swing. I still haven't had anybody hit as many balls as you hit on this facility out here. We built it for you, but looking back on it, probably would have been an advantage for you if we didn't have it. Because you stood in the same spot and hit balls the same direction with the same wind every day for 3 years or 2 years.
Yeah.
And that's my fault because I could have just tackled you and pulled you away and made you play. But there has to be a learning lesson in there too.
Oh, no, there definitely is. Now if I'm hitting balls and going on the range, I pretty much will just get a quad or a TrackMan out. That's one of the big things I picked up this year on the Korn Ferry is the guy's distance control is just so good. And like Chandler is an elite wedge and short iron player, and that's almost all because his distance control is just it's incredible how he can take spin off of shots and just control, flight his ball really well, and just control just the half little chippy shots and the full shots. I haven't seen anything like it. I mean, it's truly elite. So when I go to the range now, I pretty much will get on a TrackMan or a quad every time and just hit numbers. I don't really care about the direction of the ball. It's just hit my numbers with everything and make sure that's all dialed in. I think that's kind of freed me up a lot too, as far as my swing goes, because I'm not so much worried about direction. I'm just worried about, okay, this club goes this far. Let's make sure we're hitting that number, and then let's kind of hit some finesse shots off of that and work on really dialing in the distance control, because I think that's a big separator between guys at this level is the guys that are truly dialed in, like short and long that week. It's a huge separator because that gives you just that many more looks for birdie, and that's really what it's all about is giving yourself. Yeah,
you're
good
filling in
looks.
The gaps on these non-full shots. You're filling in the gaps and able to do that. You know, we played a tournament in Hawaii this week, and Johnny Kiefer and Luke Dossie both put in their tournament summaries that wedging cost them.
Yeah.
I mean, Johnny made 5 wedge bogeys from the fairway.
Yeah.
And he knows that's something he needs to work on. He put it in his summary. It's like, I got to do that. I don't think it's hard to play the PGA Tour and be a poor wedge player, I think. Don't you?
Yeah, you can't. You just can't. That's how you score. I mean, golf really is pretty simple when you look at it. I mean, it's just about driving it well, just keeping it in play off the tee. And if you wedge it really great and putt it great, like, you can't really play much bad golf. It's pretty simple when you boil it down. I mean, that might be overly simplified, but, I mean, it really is from what I saw this year. It's just drive it pretty straight and in play and wedge it well and putt it well. And like, it's a pretty good recipe for success.
It's a good recipe. Tell me this. You got to college, you and Garrett May weighed 127 pounds each.
Yeah.
Or one of you weighed 128.
I weighed 1 pound more.
Yeah. You were 128. He was 127. You guys were not very big. And your club head speed was way down there. Not very high. What would you say it is right now? Cruising easy club head speed.
I don't know. I've been hitting on the quad a lot, so I just get more ball speed. But I would imagine it's probably in the high teen.
So 118, 119?
117 to 19, right? 117, 118 probably, okay. I would imagine.
Well, you came to college, I think, in the 107 range.
Yeah, I think I was 105, 106, yeah.
So, again, you're probably not going to play the PGA Tour with a 107. It's pretty hard to.
Yeah, you can, but you have to wedge it and putt it on a different level.
Everything. Well, I mean, you look at guys like Jim Furyk, you look at guys like, Brian Gay, and you look at guys like Scott Verplank and Corey Pavin, and there's going to be less and less of those guys going forward.
Yeah.
I think the average PGA Tour club head speed somewhere in the 115 range now.
Yeah, 10
years ago,
it was
113, so it's going higher and higher.
It's going to, yeah.
Yeah, and these young kids. Charles Howell and I would talk about once a year, those several years when I was still at Oklahoma State, and he he'd always say, what are you feeding these kids?
Yeah.
Because every year, the guys that were coming out of the tour hit it as far as he or farther. And he, at 40, was, I mean, he was bombing it at 40, but not as far as those kids coming out of college. So I'm glad to see. So what is your ball speed in the 170?
Yeah, it'll be kind of like mid 170s. Mm-hmm. I can get it into the high. I can
get in the low 80s.
If I want to, I can maybe touch the low 80s, but that doesn't really happen much on the course.
Right. Well, it shouldn't. But I know this. If you're a great wedger of the ball and a great putter, 175 is plenty of ball speed for you to play any competitive golf. So, well, this is all good to me. I'm glad that you're back to being the great putter you are. I'm glad that you have less technique. I'm glad that you've used these experiences that on the surface are gut-wrenching. I mean, really, really devastating, and you turn them into a positive. And the fact that you caddied a guy onto the PGA Tour this year says a lot. You know the formula. You know how to get there.
Yeah, got a blueprint for it this year. So
you've got
one. Yeah.
I mean, it's perfect.
It was a great year for me overall.
Well, so what is your plan between now and the day you leave? You're going to leave on about the 11th or 12th? Maybe
yeah, I'll
11th?
Leave the afternoon of the 11th. So, I mean, just more of the same. Just try to play a decent amount of golf, and when I go hit some balls, make sure my distances are dialed in, and make sure the putter stays hot, and I mean, just make sure I'm still sharp around the greens. It'll be pretty simple. The game feels really good, so it's more about just kind of maintaining that, and I've kind of looked online at the course I'm going to play, so I don't think there'll be too many drivers there, actually. I think it's just going to be more about being pretty dialed in with your wedges and short irons, so just make sure my distance control is pretty good with those. So hopefully we can keep it rolling.
Sounds like to me you got a great plan. I want to thank you for coming by today. I know you're going to go practice out of this afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be great. But I'm really, really excited for you and thrilled that you are at second stage. I know you're going all the way this year. You're going to do it. And let's just keep the dream alive, right?
Yes, sir. That's the plan.
All right, well, sick 'em bears, Braden.
Yes, sir. Sick 'em.